Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 188 of the Stone Age Gamer Podcast for the week of February 9th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is well-oiled Marine Dan Ryan.
Inside joke. I love it. Watch Grace and Frankie. Brilliant.
And our returning guest, painter of squares, Square Painter, a.k.a. Adam Shub.
Hi.
No inside jokes there.
That's it's right. You're not a well-oiled Marine, Adam.
I mean, we could make that happen. Like,
could
I'm interested.
Were you a Marine?
What? No.
Oh, okay.
No, but he is in Philly where there's plenty of Crisco on like the...
Yeah, they were oiling up the, lubing up the telephone poles, but morons still managed to climb them. Not in my neighborhood, though.
Smart people climbed them in your neighborhood.
I suppose. No, West Philly wasn't that crazy. I mean, people were driving around, honking their horns and yelling and screaming and lighting off fireworks. But all the craziness was Center City and South Philly.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Well, Adam is here to continue our Creators Month by talking about his paintings, his YouTube videos, and some other topics in the world of gaming, like the Twin Galaxies controversy that we are...
I got to talk about my own stuff again?
A little bit. But before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, boy, we have so much fun stuff to talk about tonight, and I don't know about you, Dan, but I have you been playing a lot of games? Because I have so many things to talk about. I think we're just gonna have to do an entire what we've been playing episode sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're gonna need to push that for a week because I have things to say about the new Katamari game, the Endless Runner that I just downloaded. I don't know if it's new, but I just downloaded it. It's awesome, amazing Katamari. And Dragon Ball FighterZ, which is possibly the most gorgeous game that I've ever played.
I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Oh my god, it looks so good. Like, and I'm so bad. I suck so bad at that game. Because, like, there are people that I assume don't have jobs, which is how they've been able to log so many hours. Because, like, you can go on and look in the leaderboards. And it will show you the total time that these people have played. And it's years at this point that people have played somehow. And I don't really see how that's possible, but like...
What? The game's been out for what, like 2 weeks maybe?
There are people that have taken maybe a 3-hour break in those 2 weeks. Like, it's just insane. But it just plays so well. And fucking Tien is so badass in this game.
Yes, that's what I like to hear.
Oh, he's so good. He's
my favorite character. He's my favorite Dragon Ball character.
I am currently running a team of Majin Buu, Hit, and Tien. And
boy, what a combo.
It's so good. Hit is really cool in the game, and I know nothing about Hit. He's really cool. Beerus is really cool. Like, but there's a lot to say about it. Shadow of the Colossus came out today. There's stuff to say about that. We need a whole show.
Yeah, we do need a whole show because I've got tons to say about Celeste.
I never played the original. I know. Go ahead and yell. I know how good it is.
Shadow of the Colossus?
I never played the original. I watched my roommate in college play it. I know how amazing and good the game is and how much I'd love it. And yes, the remake looks friggin' incredible.
The remake looks like I imagined it looking when I was playing it on PS2.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Like, there have been people posting screenshots of it all day, obviously, because today, as we're recording, because we record on Tuesdays now, it came out today, so people have been putting, you know, like, this game looks amazing on the PS4 Pro, and holy shit, does that game
I can
look
imagine.
Amazing on the Pro. So I will be getting that Friday, because I'm poor, and Friday's payday, so... You know, there you go. But, oh, God, it looks just gorgeous. Yeah, I can't wait. I can't
All my MAGFest money is going to, like, bills and adult stuff, so I don't even have, like, a lot of fun money from that. I wanted to get a Switch. I still haven't gotten one. So I have a lot to catch up on. There's been a lot of games on sale on Steam, so I've been catching up on a lot of older stuff.
Nice. Yeah, I was just watching a trailer earlier today for a game I never heard of called Dandara.
Yeah.
But, boy, that game looks freaking crazy. You're like this girl, and you can gravity doesn't necessarily affect you, but it's a platformer, but you don't walk. It's just all about you doing these like straight line line of sight dash moves from point A to point B, and it's like kind of a shooter platformer, and the whole world keeps rotating around because you can stick to any flat surface. It's pretty crazy looking, and I'm looking at this like, oh cool, this is out today. I downloaded Celeste like 4 days ago and I freaking love it. I'm nowhere near done that. So
wait, was that the you posted it's like 2D pixel art. You posted something on
Facebook.
Yes,
that was Celeste.
Yeah. I
watched
about 30 seconds
of it.
Like, yeah, you're talking my language. It looks really good. So
very cool.
I went back and I revisited Max Payne 3 because I kind of played that when it first came out, and my God, is that game awesome? Like, so goddamn good. And I'm going back and playing it on hard mode. I'm unlocking like everything else, and I've been, a lot of people have been saying, oh, you should just stream. You should stream on YouTube through your Square Painter channel. So that's probably going to be the first game that I do, because like I'm so locked into that right now. I love Max Payne 3 so much, and I also just picked up Watch Dogs 2, which is a lot more fun than I thought it would be.
I really liked the first one.
Yeah, the first one was all right. I didn't finish it. This one is a lot, it's just a lot more polished, and yeah, there's a lot more to do.
The first one had a lot of really good ideas that it was like, you're not quite ready yet. But you have to have a launch title out, I get it.
Right.
I never got around to playing the second one, because there's just so much other stuff to do. Like, today, on PS Plus games for the month, like Knack, which I don't really care that much about, like, I'll play it with the kids, but that game Rhyme came out, and Rhyme was like that really cool, like almost cel shaded looking, very like a painted cartoon that kind of looks like Zelda, but you know, in that sort of spirit. But it's like a puzzle solving game for the most part. Like, that was a free game. This is so fuck. I got that to play too. That now
sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I'll just throw really out one thing with what I've been playing. I've been playing Yooka-Laylee with my son, and I was joking that the game is just so chock full of puns, it's ridiculous. And this one in particular, just to Dan, there's a sentient minecart named Kartos, the god of ore.
That's
oh
awesome.
God.
Oh
that's
god. That's so awesome. I like that a lot.
God of ore looks
awesome.
I'm
never going to play it. I'm never going to play that game.
Yeah.
But
we'll talk more about it later. We all had to get a little bit off of our chest there. So let's back to the no. Go ahead.
But wait, is Yooka-Laylee the JonTron debacle? I mean, we're not going to talk about that tonight. But was that?
Yeah, he lent a voice to that game and was like, "Here's the thing: there's no voice acting in Yooka-Laylee. It's all it's all gibberish." So apparently he recorded like four lines of gibberish, and then after the controversy with him came out, they removed him from the game. Like, okay, so we didn't get to hear JonTron grunt for 4 seconds. Oh no.
Oh boy. Anyway, moving on.
Hold on. There is one more important thing.
Yes.
With the next PS4 software update, we will finally, almost 4 years into the system, when you look through your library of purchased things, you're finally going to be able to hide certain purchases. So I can take off the beta that I played of Destiny fucking 3 years ago out of my library. I'm really excited about it.
All right.
It's such a nonsense feature that it hasn't been included yet. Really?
I've barely bought anything off the PlayStation Store. Like, Manhunt for PS2 is one of my favorite games ever.
Fucking
and
love
it was,
that game.
Yeah, man, it was
it's
re-released.
So ridiculous.
Oh, it's fantastic. I love stealth games and just, you know, over the top gang
and murder
type stuff.
Who doesn't?
And murder. Yeah, it just gratuitous violence in games kind of turns me off unless it kind of works with the game. And Manhunt does that perfectly. And this is probably the fifth or sixth time I've bought this game, and it's still so good.
It's the different, like, the first Manhunt is like tongue-in-cheek, and there's a certain amount of dark humor to it, whereas the second Manhunt is just uncomfortable. Like Manhunt 2 is like, oh, you guys got too real, man. Like this is just this is now just a murder simulator, and that's not fun at all.
The first one, as you really get into the game, gets really fucked up. The second one, my problem with it was you got guns way too early, and there was just ammo laying around, and it essentially just became a third-person shooter, and there was no fear to it. The first one, you're constantly afraid. You're constantly being hunted. You know, you're always overpowered, outnumbered, and the guys are always like better armed than you. There's always a sense of fear, and Manhunt 2... It just wasn't scary to me.
Plus, it didn't have the pig guy at the end. So.
Yeah, it didn't have Pigsy with his dick hanging out and a chainsaw. So, that's what every game needs.
It was on the Wii.
Yeah, right. Imagine that.
That was such a weird choice.
It really
was. We're making Manhunt 2. Cool, is it coming to PS3 and 360? Nope, Wii and PS2.
Oh, yeah. Rockstar was like neck deep in making GTA 4 at the time, so it was a very weird time for them to even make that game.
I'm surprised State of the Union 2 or State of Emergency 2 wasn't a fucking Wii U exclusive.
Yeah, oh god, they made a sequel to that game.
They made a sequel to that. Jesus.
I remember getting that after GTA 3 came out, being so excited, and like
you and everyone else. Yeah, and that game sold so well.
And it's terrible. It was so bad.
Everyone was coming back like, man, this game sucks. Yeah. I thought this was going to be the next GTA. Like, just because it's made by the same developer doesn't mean it's the same game.
Well, it was 2001. We really had no frame of reference back then.
It is still an impressive amount of characters on screen.
That was the big thing that it boasted. I remember that there was just an insane amount of people running around, but it was all fluff, surface stuff. There was no depth to the game whatsoever.
I mean, if you, in Mega Man 2, if it was you and a big old fucking fish and four pellets, the game broke. So, the fact that there were 9,000 people on screen, you know, only a couple years later was relatively impressive.
Yeah.
Still a horrible game, though.
Yeah, Mega Man 2 has a lot more depth than State of Emergency.
Really and dumb. Mega Man 2 is a two-dimensional game.
That's true.
It is.
I'm hilarious. depth humor.
I have a Mega Man 2 painting planned. I have a 2-foot square canvas, and I'm going to do a boss fight from it that I've been wanting to do for a long time on that. So I'm excited about it.
So that's a good segue to, in case anybody doesn't know who you are and what you do, why don't you tell us a little bit about the square painter? Who is Adam?
Who is me? Who is me? I paint, I recreate scenes from our childhood, from everything from 8-bit Nintendo, Sega Master System, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. I recreate them in scenes on canvas in pixels. So I draw a grid out on a canvas first and paint little squares so it looks digitized but also hand-painted. And I put everything together in Photoshop first, so it's like a conducive design. I reconstruct everything. So it's not like an exact screenshot of the game. I kind of make it like a scene from the game or something we remember.
Yeah, like you recently did a DuckTales one that I'm looking at on your Facebook page, and it's got them all lined up. And that kind of stuff's cool because you wouldn't see that in the...
You wouldn't
see a lot of these things in the original games. And those recreations are pretty freaking cool.
I appreciate it. I'm going to be doing a lot more of that.
Well, that is mighty exciting. You said you had a Mega Man 2 thing in the works. What else do you have cooking? Anything else you'd like to share?
I have a possible Maniac Mansion piece, because that's one of my favorite games on the system, and I just want to paint it. I have a Metal Gear Solid piece. If you guys looked on my Twitter, I posted that when it was half done.
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah. That one is one that I did a very long time ago, like a huge monster, like 4-foot by 2-foot. And that was before I really like had my technique down. It wasn't very good. So this one is done in a different style with much smaller pixels on a much smaller canvas. And it looks a lot cleaner, and the crop is different. And I'm looking at it right now. It needs a little more touch-ups, and it'll be done tomorrow. I'm very happy about that. And then I also have a 12x16 Friday the 13th piece that I tweaked a little bit. I did some custom sprite edits, and happy about that one too. So can't wait to finish that.
I'm still waiting for the My Hero
fucking painting. That was the little thing that played when you got killed, right?
It's so good.
Was that a pack-in game for the Master System? Because when I got my Master System when I was a kid, that was the first game I had.
I don't know if it was a pack-in, but I had it. It very well might have been. I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been at some point on the card, right?
Yeah, it was a card game, and it's actually like all the Hue card game. Are they called Hue cards on there, or just that TurboGrafx?
They're the Sega Mega cards. Anyway, I don't know what they're technically called, but
I know all of those are kind of hard to find now. The card games, they're all, you know, kind of. I mean, Master System has gone up in value anyway, but you don't see the card ones too much. My favorite card one was Transbot, that side-scrolling shooter. You ever play that one?
Oh, that was so good.
Right? Transbot ruled. Me and my dad used to play that all the time.
If I'm thinking of the right one, like your ship would change, like from like a side-scrolling, like a
ship to a like a transformer.
A big fucking robot, right?
Yeah. There were these little like trucks with treads that would come along the ground, and you'd blow them up, and there would be like a question mark bubble, and you would touch that, and then this meter would run between A through F, and whenever you stopped it on, it would change like your ship, or it would change your ship into a robot depending on what you landed on.
So good.
Yeah, it was so much fun. You had to get it on D, though, in the first area, and then when it would scroll to the next area, you would get this crater, and it would take you down into, like, some subterranean base. I remember that was, like, the only way to, like, that was the way to play the game, to progress through the levels.
Yeah. Just
a quick correction. It's just the Sega card, not the Sega Mega card.
I see.
They're the cartridges on a lot of the old ones are called the Mega Cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I only have Spy versus Spy and My Hero on card, and I'm looking at the box now. It says the Sega card. That's all.
Do you have the Monopoly cartridge that says Monopoly?
Oh, I don't know. Do I have Monopoly?
I think all of them have that misprint. Just mono space uppercase P poly. it's really funny.
Yeah, no, I go right from Missile Defense 3D to My Hero, so no Monopoly.
Gotta get that.
No Monopoly. Ever... I have Poseidon or whatever.
Poseidon. Yeah.
Poseidon on Atari 2600. That's
Pulpository.
Yucky.
I have the Wii Okami game with the IGN logo on it. That's pretty fantastic.
Okay.
Did you ever see that one?
The what?
The Okami for Wii with the IGN logo?
No.
So in the first print run of Okami for the Wii, somebody at Capcom was so lazy that they actually swiped artwork off IGN, and you can see the IGN watermark in the background art.
That's amazing.
So you could actually send in if you were bothered by that, you could like Capcom did the whole thing. You could ask for replacement artwork, and they sent three. I did because why the hell not? And they sent me three different replacement cover arts for Okami, like just totally unique artwork. It's just really cool.
That's amazing.
One of them was from Giant Bomb. One of them was from.
Oh man! Imagine if Capcom gave a shit like nowadays about anything. That would be amazing.
They spelled their own name wrong on one of their games, right? It was Resident Evil Revlatians was one of them. I feel like they spelled Capcom wrong on one of their games. I got to look that up.
Who's worse, them or Konami these days?
Oh, Konami, hands down. Konami Capcom at least tries to make cool games from time to time.
I don't know.
I don't like Street Fighter V, but I appreciate the effort that's going into Street Fighter V. Now, I can look at that and say they are trying to make a good game. And
it doesn't like the Street Fighter like fighting community or like don't they just ignore 5? I think everybody still plays like 4 for like competitively. No one cares about 5 because it's so bad.
I feel like there's like obviously the tournaments like Evo and whatnot are focusing on 5 because they're more or less sponsored, I guess. But
I guess
right, they
there's,
have to.
There's yeah, there's definitely a contingent of people, myself included, that vastly prefers 4. And it breaks my heart because, you know, it's a new Street Fighter game. I want the hell out of it.
Of course.
I prefer
Super Street Fighter 2 because that was the last one that I actually really sat down and played. That was the first one with, like, Fei Long and Cammy and T-Hawk.
Fei Long, Cammy, DJ, and T-Hawk.
T-Hawk, yep.
Oh boy,
DJ was... with his pants that said maximum on the side for some reason.
Well, they were supposed to say what was it, max out or no? It was supposed to be some other word, and they changed it because the word wouldn't work when they reversed the sprite. So they had to find a word that was the same when you cut
that
it
would
in
just
half,
mirror.
Backwards and forwards.
I
so
see.
They changed it to maximum.
Always learning things from you. Always learning.
It was indeed Resident Evil Revelations. They spelled CAPCPOM on the game.
Wow.
Capcom is spelled Capcom. This is so wonderful.
Somebody did it on purpose. Some graphic designer there did it on purpose, and God bless him for that.
Oh God! Just the camp guy. There's a guy who used to come into my old Funko Land and ask for Marvel versus Capcom.
Okay,
camp. Complete non sequitur. There just made me.
I hope I met that guy at like Digital Press at NAVA sometime. There was always a cast of characters that would hang out there.
Oh, I miss going to Digital Press.
Me too. Remember when I ran into you there? That's like
I do. It was
after I
blew
met
my
you
mind.
When I met you at that one show in Manhattan, and then like 2 years later.
Yeah, it was a couple of years later, and I'm like, oh, that's a guy. I love that guy.
That's the guy. Yep.
It's
still
the guy.
Still doing my stupid shit.
Ah, your stupid shit's amazing, man.
Thanks, man.
That
I appreciate
still
it.
Could not believe that first time I saw your stuff. I'm at that bar, and we're there to try to like promote our band because we played there like at a regular gig.
Right,
What was that place? What the hell was that place called?
I don't remember. It was somewhere in like Alphabet City. It was some shithole bar.
Yeah, it was. Man, I wish I could remember. We played there every week for like 6 months, but
well,
it was
Marine.
No.
No. Okay.
No, it wasn't well. But we're in there and they're doing this art show, and my lead singer in the band is like, Chris, turn around. I'm like, what? What's what?
I had
and it
like
was that gorgeous scene from Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah, I had the I'll Get My Revenge. I had the Jacquio's Castle and
Jacquio's Castle. That was the one that I saw, and I was just like, I still have that picture somewhere.
I know, with me like drunk as shit leaning against the wall. It's got my brother drove that night. That was my like second art show or third. I didn't know what I was doing back then.
Wait, Chris, did you just admit that you took a picture of his pictures? I'm not paying you for your shit, but I'm gonna take a picture of it.
Well, I took a picture of him.
Photos of my
picture.
Stuff all the time. That's fine. I don't care.
I didn't frame it and put it up on my.
Yeah.
Whatever. You want a low res? Like, what were cameras like back then? 6 megapixels?
Yeah, it was a wild cell. I think it was like a flip phone camera or something like that. It was
something
ridiculous.
Like that. Yeah.
You weren't carrying your DSLR around Brooklyn like a hipster?
No.
It was Manhattan.
I was never cool enough to be
Manhattan.
A hipster.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was in Manhattan.
Nobody likes Manhattan.
No, even if you live there, nobody likes it. No one wants to be there.
But that place was right near Katz's Deli, and I used to love...
Oh, it was like 2 blocks from there.
Yeah, walk over there after shows and get like giant sandwiches. And
hell yeah.
Man, my love of sandwiches knows no end.
It really
does.
Yo,
there's a place over here in West Philly called Koch's Deli, and... Oh, man, it's a little expensive. Like, if a regular sandwich is going to cost you like 13 or 14 bucks... But holy shit, some of the best sandwiches I've ever had. And the owner is a fucking weirdo whack job. You'll go in there and there'll maybe be like one or two people in front of you, and you're still going to wait bare minimum a half hour to 45 minutes for your food. And if like you don't go right up to the counter and get in his face to order, he'll take other people in front of you. But like as he's making sandwiches, he like gives out slices of pickles or turkey or something like that. But... The guy just does not know how to run a business, so it's like you have to pay a little bit more money, deal with his bullshit, and then you get an awesome sandwich at the end, and it's kind of worth it.
I'll go through a lot to get an awesome sandwich, I'm not going to lie.
All right, well, if you're down here ever, we'll go to Koch's Deli, and you can experience the weirdness that it is and the amazing food you get at the end.
I'm excited. So now you've been doing lately some pretty cool YouTube videos that I wanted to bring up. The emulate the shit out of these videos. You did an NES one a few months back, and then you just did a Super Nintendo one, and I really liked those videos. Thank you.
I've been trying really hard with my YouTube channel to be like more like just putting out like more frequency, you know, quicker turnaround, not a video like every like 3 weeks. But people like those. I'm glad you like them.
Well, the I noticed your backdrop. You know, that's you moved recently, right? That was like last year, the year before. Or?
Last year, about last year. Yeah, July. July we moved.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that, and then I remember the first YouTube video you did with that backdrop of your fancy ass shelves back there, looking pretty snazzy.
Oh man, just wait, because that is just one corner of our living room / game room, and we have even a ton of stuff that we can't even put out of toys and shit like that, because we just our apartment's not that big, but all of our games are out there, and we're gonna do a game room tour. So, like, I'm
excited about that.
From where I'm standing, like, you could see the Super Nintendo games and like some boxed NES and some Genesis. Below me is two shelves full of all my Nintendo games, and then to my right is all my boxed Super Nintendo. And then if you go even further to the right, I have this giant like six shelf like collector case that's like almost 7 feet high. And Nina and I have all of our like heavy hitter collector games in there. Nina's got all her crazy rare horror games. I have all my Nintendo and like rare Super Nintendo games in there. We have all these like, you know, rare toys and things like that. I have like all like my really obscure Star Wars figures in there. So yeah, can't wait to film that.
I'm looking forward to doing that one of these days. It's gonna be a while before I get to actually put up shelves in here. I've been chronicling my game room progress on the Stone Age Gamer blog for a while now, but because my daughter is essentially the destroyer of worlds, any media that's on a shelf that she can reach will be destroyed. So I'm not risking it with putting game
shelves
up.
You better put some bulletproof glass around those Super Nintendo and Genesis games you got.
You know what I'm talking about. They're not going up until she's old enough to understand. I will not do that. But I did recently.
She's already
have...
eaten them.
We were talking the other day.
Yeah, go ahead.
You have Haganai and Aero Fighters complete in the box, right?
I do.
Jesus Christ, man! Like Aero Fighters now is like in the box. Like they're in like really good shape, right?
The stupid good shape.
Oh my God! You could easily $2,000 for Aero Fighters, probably $1,500 to $1,700 for Haganai. But if they're in like really, really minty shape, you could probably ask even more than that, because the ones that I always see are a little beat up.
These are in ridiculously good shape. That collection was out of this world. The only rare thing in that collection that was pretty beat up was a Wild Arms. Not Wild Arms, Wild Guns.
Uh-huh.
And the cart itself is in pretty good shape, but the box was a little a little roughed up, but most of that stuff was in
the
just
cart,
like
the cart loose is still, I mean, I think it's under 200 now. It's 200 or under. Like I said in my Super Nintendo video, I don't even know what those games are going for these days. I just know that they're rare and hard to find, but they're great and everybody should play them. So nobody ever, that's why I wanted to make those videos, is because everyone always dances around the fact like, oh, you should play these games and find an alternate way. It's like, no, get a Super Nintendo emulator, get a SNES 9X or whatever the new one is, and just download the ROM already. Don't pay what these games are going for nowadays. Just friggin' play them.
Play and like, Haganai. Yeah. It's fucking awesome.
Haganai is so good.
I hate to disparage, you know, like, going out and getting the cartridges, but the collecting scene has gotten so toxic in a lot of these situations. Like you were talking about another one of the things in your video, Demon's Crest. That was one of the things I got from that collection. I never would have seen that cartridge had I not gotten that collection. But you know, now I have a complete Demon's Crest, which is gorgeous and
awesome.
Wonderful. But
oh man, I have my Demon's Crest loose. I got that from one of my friends. You guys know Chris, DJ Cutman?
Yeah.
He got this immaculate set of games from one of his friends getting rid of stuff, and a Demon's Crest was in there. So he didn't want it, so he sold it to me for like half of what it was going for years ago. I gave him a really good hookup on one of my paintings a long time ago, so he did that for me. So
nice.
That's like the only way I'm ever going to acquire any of these really hard-to-find games. Either I've gotten some of those in like trades. People like, you know, hey, I have this rare game, and I like one of your paintings, so I've done that. I got my Final Fight guy that way. There's no way I would have paid money for that.
So that's one that I'm looking for. Like, I would love to have a Final Fight guy, but I'm not paying for it. I'd love to have Mega Man X3, but I'm not paying for it. Like, I'd pay regular prices for that. But even some of the other like lower tier stuff, like I still don't have a copy of Contra Hardcore. I have the box, but I don't have the cartridge. And even that is like
$50 now, probably.
Something
I don't
like
really
that.
Know what Genesis goes for. 50, you know what? 50 is not bad for Contra Hardcore for how much fun that game is, because you got like the four characters and there's all the different branching paths. The game is a lot of fun.
It is. It's such a great game. But, you know, I have it. I have ways to play it, obviously.
Right, right.
But I still want that cartridge. You know, it's one of the few Contra games I don't own. And, crap, what was the other one? Oh, well, you were there for, was 2 years ago when I missed out on that home improvement for Super Nintendo, completing the box.
Was I? Where was that?
That was Too Many Games. That was that stand that was, like, it was one of the tables was like right across from you.
Yes.
And I was eyeing it up all day, and then I kept passing on it, and then I went back but just decided, no, screw it. I'm going and buying that thing. It's a complete home improvement. When am I going to see that again?
Never. You never see that complete.
Stupid, stupid game for a stupid price, and I decided I didn't care, and so I went back for it, and somebody else had bought it.
Man, what does that even go for complete? Like $100 probably?
Probably. They were asking $80 for it, and
that's way not bad.
Too much. It's so much, it's such a dumb game. But you know me, I love the absurd. You know, like I still need a box of manual for my Michael Jordan Chaos in the Windy City. But
hey, man, whenever anybody says what's your favorite game, like that's my facetious go-to right there. So I back that fully. Like I want to get I don't know if you watched our pickup video for MAGFest. I want to get all the Schwarzenegger NES games complete in box, so I understand the silliness. I picked up a Total Recall complete in box, which, strangely enough, you don't see the box and manual for that too often. You see the cart all the time, but complete in box, I hardly ever see.
Do you have RoboCop Terminator?
Complete in the box for Super Nintendo with that sweet black
plastic box?
Yeah, I have it from when I was a kid. I never got rid of that because that's so
awesome.
I
always
awesome.
Wanted that one.
Dude, I have a ton. All my Super Nintendo games from when I was a kid, I've told you, I never got rid of. Like, you know, my Earthbound, Secret of Mana, Secret of Evermore, Mega Man X2, X3. I think even Wild Guns, was it? Maybe. But definitely X2 and X3 I had when I was a kid, never got rid of. So those are my originals.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't. Yeah. I only had X1 when I was a kid.
Right, right.
And
everyone,
I just have that one complete. X2 came in that collection. I still don't have X3. I don't like X2 all that much. Like Dan and I actually talked about that. We did that on our summer series, and we both did not like it.
No, that game's terrible.
I wouldn't say it's terrible. It's not nearly... Well, if you're comparing it to Mega Man X, Mega Man X is like a perfect... Okay. It's a 10 out of 10. I also have a lot of nostalgia for X2 because I played the shit out of it when I was a kid. It's a damn good game, but nowhere near the perfection of X. X3 is where it really starts to go downhill, and they cram too much in there. The soundtrack is really good, but X3 is... It's not worth the... $200+ it's going for.
Exactly. And I feel the same way about X. X is a freaking masterpiece. It's one of the most incredible games I've ever played. It's damn near flawless in every single respect. It's
amazing. Easily.
Game.
I would say 10 out of 10. One of the best games ever made.
And trying to top that, trying to follow that up with X2, especially when you think back to like the lineage of Mega Man games, like, you know, Mega Man 1, okay, Mega Man 2,
Yeah.
You know, so, all right, where are we going with X2? And it's just like they took – it was just missing that soul, you know what I mean? It's just missing that chunk that made X so good. And even Maverick Hunter on PSP I didn't care for because it's like how do you top perfection like that? You just don't.
Right.
You don't
I never even played that on a PSP. I heard the ones on PlayStation, like X4, I heard is fun. I've never played any of those. I have no experience with them. But I've heard X4 is all right. X5 I think is okay. I could be wrong.
X6 is terrible.
That's what I've heard. X6 and X7 that like Kojima Inafune didn't want to do them anymore and was like, just fuck it.
They're the Dragon Ball GT of Mega Man X.
Yeah, there you go.
He didn't want to do them anymore, and it was obvious he didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah,
like,
it was very obvious.
Phone this in, dude.
I got to meet him at MAGFest like 2 years ago. It was awesome. I mean, it was only for like 30 seconds, but I got a picture with Inafune and with a big painting of Proto Man behind me.
Did you ask him what the hell happened with Mighty No. 9?
No, I didn't, because you know Matt Papa, you know him from Inti Creates?
I think I have met him, yes.
Yeah, Matt's one of my best friends, and he was Inafune's translator, and Matt works for Inti Creates, and that's like a really sore spot for him, is Mighty No. 9, so I definitely did not bring that up.
It's a sore spot for me, too, man.
Yeah, it is for all of us. I briefly played it, and it's just... I wanted to love it. I wanted to.
I did too. And there's the core of a good game in there.
There is.
I will say that I am currently playing from time to time Mighty Gunvolt Burst, which is
Are so good. Good.
That's a solid game right there.
Yeah, that and Blaster Master Zero. I know you played that, right?
Oh my god, Blaster Master Zero is amazing.
I'm up to the area 8 or something, and like the mutant stomach or something like that. I think I'm at the end. I haven't beaten it yet.
Yeah, there's 9 areas total. Are you playing it on if you get all the secrets, you get to area 9.
All right, and, I'm playing on a 3DS.
Okay, yeah. If you get all the secrets, you get to area 9, and you get like this totally tricked out version of your tank, which is amazing.
Nice.
I want them to make another one so badly because they completely nailed it with that game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Did the 3DS get any of the weird DLC characters?
Oh yeah, with like Shovel Knight and Shantae. Yeah, I actually Matt Kent, when he last year for MAGFest, he always comes in to like, you know, because his family lives in Jersey, and we were hanging out and we went out to dinner, and he like I brought up Blaster Master and we were talking about it, and he's like, you have to swear you won't say anything. I'm like, fine, I won't say anything. And so like I knew like 2 weeks before that Shovel Knight was going to be the new DLC character that was coming out, and I was like freaking out because I love Shovel Knight so much.
Knight's so great. And I'm thinking when they announced that, I was like, wait, how do you play Shovel Knight and Blaster
Master? It's great. It totally changes the game.
It does all the DLC characters completely change the way it plays, which is so smart. I loved that about it. I actually played through most of it a second time with Gunvolt, but then they kept releasing DLC characters, so I'd stop playing with one and start again. I'd be like, And then by that point, the tidal wave of Switch games was dropping, so I haven't really gone back to Blaster Master yet, but I would like to beat it again.
I'm like daunted to now even get a Switch, because I want to get that and like the Pro Controller and obviously Breath of the Wild, Mario Odyssey, but then like a whole bunch of my friends have just been focusing like their YouTube channels on Switch and talking about all these amazing games just in the indie shop that each and every one of them are like home runs of how good they are.
It's kind of crazy. Like I can't tell you the last time I've enjoyed any video game system this much. Like,
yeah, that's what everyone's been saying. I honestly have not cared about a Nintendo system like this since the Nintendo 64. Like, well, when the Nintendo 64 was first coming out, because I honestly hate that system. But
yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah. There's like
maybe I like for it, but not
how
a
many.
Lot.
How many? What? There's maybe 15 good games for that system, and that's kind of being like pretty liberal there.
I mean, let's see. I actually own 65 N64 games, which is kind of funny.
How many of those are racing games?
63.
Well, a lot of them are like three of them. I have All-Star Baseball 99 and 2000 just because they were free.
Okay.
Asteroids Hyper 64 is pretty cool. All right, that I'll give that. Beetlejuice Racing is cool. Banjo-Kazooie.
That's one of the few racing games that's awesome. It's Beetlejuice Racing kicks ass.
That game's great. Blast Core is a really neat game. It's weird as hell.
No, it is. It's a very odd game. That was a launch title, and the games that came out in the beginning, N64 started really, really strong, and
it
then
did.
They just got a glut of like third party crap and just shovelware on that system, because
it was impossible to develop for. Like,
yep.
It's like, you could make things for this on cartridges, where you could make PlayStation games for a third of the price and reach this audience. You know, like I'm looking at Earthworm Jim 3D. What a pile of garbage that is.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
Ugh. Hybrid Heaven. Terrible game.
That game was supposed to be good. Like that was hyped. What was the other one? Daikatana. That was the one that was hyped to hell. That was the worst game ever.
But, you know, then there's stuff like, you know, Mario Kart 64, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Killer Instinct Gold.
Is that one good? I never played it, Killer Instinct Gold.
It's KI2. It's good. Yeah, it's pretty much the arcade Ki-2, more or less.
Like some of the ones that are kind of like they're shitty, but they're like that good playable kind of shitty. Like you ever play Body Harvest?
Yeah, I have Body Harvest.
Yeah, that one, if you can get used to the crap factor controls, because like Take Two Interactive
and
did that.
The visuals. That game is so goddamn ugly.
Oh, it is. Oh, it's that God, disgusting. That well, I think the N64 graphics are ugly as shit anyway. But
I completely agree.
Stretched polygon look. Even back then, it looked like crap. I would take the PlayStation 1 graphics over the N64 any day.
See, but, I'm kind of on the fence of like, I don't know which one I hate more. Because that whole generation, I have lots of disgust for.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was the first of its kind. But the N64 is just, ugh.
It's brutal.
The only reason I have one in games in the collection is because just Nina wants N64 stuff. Otherwise, there's been so many times where I found shit at like the flea market, and like I paid $20 for this N64 lot. It's trade fodder. We're not keeping any of this crap. Like I paid money for it. It's getting flipped for something else.
And that's the thing with N64 too, is that a lot of it's. It collects a lot, you know. There's a large nostalgia for that system.
Oh, which totally. Even
totally
now,
inflates some crappy stuff. But if you look a little between the lines, like, all right, there was the remake of Space Invaders for it, which was also on PlayStation. Uh-huh. Absolutely fantastic. If you haven't played that and you like Space Invaders, you've got to play that game. It's ridiculously
fun. Space Invaders is
fun.
A classic. You have to like that game.
Yeah, this new version is so good. It's not as good as the Game Boy Color one, which came out at the same time, which is weird to say, but it's ridiculously good. The N64 has the best version of Dr. Mario. Hands down. It's got a four-player mode. It's got a single-player story mode. It's got all these characters you can choose from. It's got hand-drawn animation for the little characters in the middle. Dr. Mario 64 is the best Dr. Mario. New Tetris is amazing.
Okay.
Two just totally fantastic puzzle games that are only on this and haven't been ported to anything. Like Dr. Mario 64 and New Tetris did not show up on Virtual Console anywhere, and those games are absolutely stellar if you like puzzle, like, you know, block falling puzzle games. Like they're just great.
I absolutely love like puzzle. Tetris Attack is my favorite puzzle game, but original Tetris and Dr. Mario I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm. And even that what is it, the version of Tetris Attack on the 64, the Pokemon Puzzle League's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
That crazy it's got this weird mode where instead of just playing in a regular well, it's got a like a tube. So you spin the whole thing around so you're playing panel to pawn on like a rotating
like a cylinder?
Like a cylinder, yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. It's right. Freaking crazy. Like, and I'm
that
not great
nuts.
At that. I'm not great at that to begin with, but yeah, that's that, you know, if you can stand the Pokemon license, I'm not a huge Pokemon fan. It's very Pokemon cartoon more so than the games. But if you can stand that, it's a really good version of Puzzle League, Tetris Attack kind of stuff.
Alright. Really? You don't like Pokemon? The new Pokemon games, Pokemon Y, I loved, and I'm playing through Pokemon Sun now. It's so much fun. It's so good.
I am probably going to take another swing at it once I once it comes out on Switch, the whatever version that is, because I'm sure that's going to be a big deal. Recently, a couple of years back, made an attempt at getting into Pokemon, and I do dig the original Pokemon. I started with Pokemon Blue, and I got most of the way through the game, I think.
Uh-huh.
But I just kind of fell off because other things were coming out at the time.
Did you play that originally in like 98, 99 when it came out?
I did not. I was working at Funko Land at the time.
Go ahead.
The kids and the Pokemon cards. It turned me off to that franchise completely.
My brother was the perfect age for that because he's 31. He's turning 32 soon. So let's see. I was 17 back then. So my brother was 13. He was the perfect age. And the way I got into it was my parents took us on vacation to Cancun. And on the plane, it's a long plane ride, my brother had Pokemon Red and Pokemon Blue. He was playing through Blue, and I was, like, making fun of him about it. And the way he got me into it was, he just looked at me, he's like, it's like Dragon Warrior, but instead of using weapons, you capture the monsters, and you use the monsters as your weapon. And I just looked at him like, what? Really?
That's a pretty good way to sell that game.
Yeah, that's
my brother at
13 really good.
Told me that. Like, that's exactly how he said that to me. He's like, it's like Dragon Warrior, but you use the monsters. like, okay, give me Pokemon Red, and I chose Bulbasaur, and I fell in love. Like, when I think back to that vacation, It's synonymous with me playing Pokemon Red. Like, I played through that, and by the time we were taking, like, the plane ride home, I was up to, like, the Elite Four. So I completely skipped over a lot of the other ones, but Pokemon as a whole, I have a lot of respect for that game and that whole genre of games.
I learned to give a crap about it, and what knocked me off my socks to begin with was the soundtrack. Because here I was playing a Game Boy game I had never played before, and I'm listening to this wonderful soundtrack, all these great chiptunes that I had never heard before. So that was probably the highlight of playing through that game for me.
Oh, it's great! It is even playing now. The game still, I guess, holds up. I haven't gone back and played the original ones on Game Boy in a long time, but
it does hold up. Classic. I mean, I will say that it definitely sucked me in from time to time. It was just came at a time when I didn't have a lot of time to play it, and
of course,
and other things were coming out that I'd be like, well, I want to play this instead, and it was a different time. You know, if that stuff starts getting ported to Switch, I'll probably go back and do it now because since the Switch came out, I play more games because of the way that system works. So
yeah, it's very conducive for that. My one of my friends brought it to MAGFest and we had it hooked up in the hotel room, and it was awesome.
Good times.
Yes, very much.
All right, we're gonna take ourselves a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Twin Galaxies situation and the high scores and all of our opinions on the things and the whatnots and the goings-on that have been happening there. So, you're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around.
And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, on You Shall Not Pass Go, this month, Genghis does story speculation, our heroes talk about Genghis's new commander decks, and they go over MTG's newest set, Rivals of Ixalan.
That sounds then, sexy.
It really, like, you've obviously been to Ixalan.
I know it's all about Genghis's commander decks.
Good thing we're staying in Ixalan. Because Dave and Genghis talk about the newest MTG D&D supplement, a trio of subclasses in Unearthed Arcana, and they discuss the state of miniatures.
I love supplements.
I love miniatures. I love miniature supplements. And board games. They review the Dresden Files cooperative card game, and what do you mean? Finally, to round out this anniversary episode, they present the inaugural Dengue Awards. Are you curious who won? I know I sure as shit am. Then check out You Shall Not Pass Go, episode 24, the Dengue Awards.
Then, for our 50th Waveback episode, Matt and I, well, my 50th Waveback episode, Matt did not retroactively edit himself into the previous episodes. Matt and I decided to take a look at the music. Not listen to, but look
at we're just looking at the sheet music.
Just looking at it. The iconic classic game and its two most prolific remakes, Metroid 2 Return of Samus for Game Boy. Because the soundtracks of each are so short, we were able to listen to each in its entirety. That's not entirely true. In fact, that's blatantly false. I didn't write this. We were not able to list each of them in their entirety, but we were able to take a nice selection of the proper musics of those games and compare and contrast them. So we listened to Metroid 2 Return of Samus, AM2R, and Metroid Samus Returns, and we compared all those tracks, and it was freaking awesome, and it was really long because it was our 50th episode, so we figured we'd go long. So see how they all stack up to one another in a Waveback Episode 50 Metroid 2 Comparison.
Finale. On an all-new episode of of Nonstop Comic Shop, the guys take a look at two miniseries whose titles each feature. Are you sitting down?
I'm sitting.
Stand up. Sit down again. Each feature the word foe, Chris. A And not pho like the noodles, which are amazing. Which is
so
actually
good.
Pronounced pho. But then, like, it messes up all the, like, pho show noodle house. Like, it fucks the pho show. Like, it's not. First up is the lethal foes of Spider-Man, not to be confused with the deadly, fatal, unhealthy, or deleterious foes. It's an entertaining yet bloated scrum of a story where six bad guys too many fight over a pulse rifle from aliens. Then, we have Fantastic Four Foes, featuring snappy, engaging dialogue written by Robert the Talking Dead Kirkman, and some embarrassingly lazy copy-and-paste artwork from someone who strangely isn't Greg Land. Also, it stars special guest villains Sexy Iron Man, Jurassic Park Cash-In Man, Whatever Power He Needs Right Now Man, Cyborg Dead Husband Man, Nazi Made of Bees Man, The Iconoclast, and Madam Butterface. Foe all this and more. Download Nonstop Comic Shop episode 15. Foe your consideration, Chris.
Look, I know Jordan listens to this, so Jordan, I'm very disappointed that you didn't call it Foe yo consideration.
Foe yo. Foe yo. Foe show.
Froyo.
Froyo is also good.
Frogurt is also cursed.
Frogurt.
But it comes with a free topping. Woo! The topping is also cursed. Aww.
You can catch all these Simpsons quotes, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com.
Oh, Simpsons did it.
Okay, we are back, and we now know a lot about Texas. Well, at least I do. I know a lot more about Texas than I did a few minutes ago. All right, so...
Well, and we also learned last week with last week's special guest.
That's true, yeah. Brett talked a lot about Texas.
Texas.
He is.
Who?
Brett's a
Who'd
cool
you have
dude.
Last week?
We had Brett Weiss, author of...
Oh, yeah. He's a really nice guy. I contributed to his Super Nintendo book for Final Fight 3.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a really good dude.
Oh, he is
so
a really good
this,
dude.
This episode now then features all co-authors on the... Can
it's
we call
true.
It, are we co-contributors? I don't know what we're
I'm going to say co-contributors. That's a okay. lot of syllables. I like that.
It is. All right, good.
That is a lot of syllables.
We will also
I did the
be
clap
in
my head. In
there. Did you? Co... All
right,
anyway.
There's more than you think.
There is.
So anyway,
we all just did that again.
God, it's a wonder nobody will sponsor us, Chris.
This is damn good entertainment, Dan.
It really right? fucking is.
This is damn good entertainment.
I'm entertained.
Yes,
I'm thoroughly entertained.
You know, you guys, you keep having me back, and you know, it's a good time. So,
we can smell our own.
We can.
Yep. We all smell terrible.
Well,
speaking of smelling terrible, let's talk about what's going on over with the high scores. So this is a really fun and fascinating story. We're actually asked by a couple of different people to talk about this. Ferg from the Atari 2600 Game by Game podcast asked if we were going to be talking about this, and I said we were. In fact, I asked him if he would come on and join us for this segment, but he's currently recording another podcast with other people that aren't us.
Ferg is a Ferb. I was listening to Phineas and Ferb earlier. With the kids, I'm the Queen of Mars, the space launch today. My daughter wants to build a colony on Mars now and be the queen. It's awesome. Anyway, Ferg is a busy man. Chris.
He is a busy man. He's very busy, very powerful man.
Very busy, very powerful.
Now, we love Ferg with all of our hearts and souls, and I'm sad that he couldn't be here because it would have been really fun to talk to him about this. I'm curious what his whole take on this situation is. And we also got Anthony Hom, another listener of our show, asked us to talk about this, the Todd Rogers fiasco with Twin Galaxies and all of its related fallout, including the wondrous long-haired Billy Mitchell. So, as the story goes, Todd Rogers was a Guinness Book of World Record holder for like the oldest world record, which is Enduro, well, not Enduro, Dragster. And this world record started coming under dispute because, you know, it's the oldest video game world record, so speedrunners want to try to beat it. And it seems that his world record is physically impossible. He is saying that he said that he got 5.51 seconds on it, and according to every technical breakdown that anyone's been able to do, including a considerably long and fascinating Ben Heck breakdown, where he like made a machine just to play Dragster.
Oh God! If Ben Heck is on the case, it's like, okay, we will let him do his thing. He will clear it all.
Yeah. Well, he concluded that the best possible score is a 5.57. And
right.
Now there's some argument to that you know, he was not actually playing it on an Atari 2600 on a CRT, like in the absolute perfect old school settings. He was doing this, you know, technical thing, but I don't know, I trust Ben Heck.
Yeah, I would. He's a legit guy.
By this many seconds too. But what's fun about this is that if you look at his other scores, that's like, okay, well, all right, Dragster 5.57 to 5.51. Okay, if you don't know anything about, you know, technicalities and whatnot, you might think, wow, he just got lucky one time and did something crazy, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at his other scores,
I they're crazy.
Absolute insanity. Like, so I have this list of his other scores that some of these are just so funny. And this
Can I throw in one thing before you read these other scores? Because I feel it's important context to this story. He submitted this score back in like the early 80s for Dragster. Right?
That's true. Yeah, this is a very, very good point.
He never provided video recorded proof of the score.
I thought it was Polaroids back then.
It was a Polaroid.
That's what I remember, because I'm honestly, I didn't follow a lot of the Twin Galaxies stuff, so this is just what I've been hearing from a lot of other people, is that it was Polaroids were submitted back then. That was the like standard way that scores were captured, that other people would be there to witness it. Polaroid was taken, and then it was submitted to Twin Galaxies.
Yeah, and it was also submitted to Activision. Like
right.
his world
That's
record
right.
with Activision, and even David Crane kind of stands behind it. Like,
wow,
look, this is just the way it is. But like, that's just it. David Crane, I'm sure he does not know. Well, I remember for sure if he programmed the game to make it so the 5.57 was the best you could possibly.
Who's going to remember that? When did this game come out? 81, 80.
Seriously, like it's not a recent thing, but
I think the only reason I bring that up is because I think it's important context to have somebody who's like, yeah, no, trust me, you know,
and that's
like
where a lot of this comes from. Yeah,
can be like doctored a little bit. It's like the kid in school who like always had to one up you, of like, mm-hmm. Oh, I got this thing. Oh yeah, I have two of them. Like, no, you fucking don't. Like, shut up. Show me a picture.
And a lot of this stuff. I was reading through some of these articles, a lot of stuff wasn't supervised in any way, shape, or form. Like,
yeah.
These things are just like, he just could have just written them down, because why the hell not, right?
Mm-hmm. What you just said about the kid in school that always had to one-up you,
mm-hmm.
That's kind of always how I felt about Twin Galaxies anyway, just from, you know, being a convention vendor, guest, what have you, and meeting these guys just, you know, peripherally.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt about these people, but anyway, that's just like my, you know, how I would look at this. But anyway, continue.
It has always been, at least to my mind, it's always been more than a little intimidating, and not in more of a toxic way than a like, boy, I don't know if I can do this. Just more like, these guys are very, very proud of their scores, and these kinds of things, I feel, has given some of these folks a false sense of like macho bravado. And
absolutely, the
handful of folks that I have met some very nice folks from this community, but I've also encountered several other folks that just, it's a very toxic, you know, this was the high point of my life kind of thing, I'm the best kind of situation. And looking at some of these records, like, I've never dug into this stuff because I've never really been a high score kind of guy. I've always been just more like, play the games for the experience of playing them. And boy, looking at this guy's list of records, like, they're physically impossible. And it's hysterical. This Google Docs sheet that I downloaded from Reddit
that somebody compiled all of his scores, and some of the notes next to him are hysterical. Like, I'm looking at Fathom for Atari 2600. The current high score, the second place high score, is 142. And Todd claims to have scored 1,110,500 points.
What? Come on.
The proven score of 142 took approximately 2.5 minutes. So the world record estimate would be 325 plus hours of playing the game.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
No, that one I don't think is actually up for dispute. That one seems legit.
Yeah, very much. Close. Very much so.
So close.
So close.
It's spot on. And like you're looking at the Grand Prix game one, you know, he claimed he got 29.47. The second place is 29.61, and it's got a note next to it is world record disputed for being impossible. And there's a lot of them that are just, no, this is actually impossible. Like Subscan, Atari 2600, second place score, 70,500. Todd's score, 1,012,000.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, just an even 1,012,000?
Yep, 1,012,000.
A lot of things that I was hearing about this just from other, you know, friends in the community and things and other podcasts and whatnot, that some of the scores that he had acquired were impossible even to get in the game because the scores would go in like an increment of, I don't know, 50 to 100, but he would have a score that would somehow land on like a 70 or something like that. So even in like the way the game would keep score, you never could even land on an increment of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fake news.
It's actual
fake news for once. Oh my God, we can actually use that term for once.
Yeah, these. Let's see.
Todd, I only score 1,000,000 points. Rogers.
Yeah,
I would like to invite him onto the show. He's not going to fucking listen.
Todd. I'm sure he's getting 1,000,000 offers to be on every retro podcast under the sun. To like,
we will
clear
be the only
name.
Ones worth doing that.
Well, clearly.
Chris is clearly worth doing.
Oh, clearly.
Just man, looking ask like all of us.
Anyone that finds an Aero Fighters complete in the box in that condition deserves to have Todd Rogers on.
Right.
I'm never letting that go.
You don't know what he had to do for it, though. That's the thing. We don't talk about
it. He does know what I had to do for it.
I do. I knew the whole story. Still jealous.
See, he's got records all over the place. Like, all over the place. He's got pinball games, Freddy and Nightmare on Elm Street. The second place score, 59,953,420. He's got 396,366,80.
What?
Right? He's even got TurboGrafx-16 world records. You know, JJ and Jeff, he marked down that he's got 99,999,990 points, world record being disputed for being impossible.
That same game thing on sucks Legendary anyway. Why would you play
I was gonna
that?
Say, I mean, that one I'm actually going to give him a little bit of a longer leash on because, like, I don't know that anybody's really ever played that game to complete this.
Seriously.
It's awful.
I can't dispute that. But this is one of the articles that I was reading about this had a really valid point about how it's such a good thing that these scores are being removed because the thing about it is that new people that want to get involved in this, that want to try to go for world records, this stuff is really demoralizing. Like, right. If you go there and you try to get a world record and you think, oh, I did really well at this game. I got I beat the second place score in Jungle Hunt for Atari for 73,000 points. Like, I feel really good, except I'll never reach first place because it's 851,500 points, not realizing that, well, that's actually impossible. That didn't actually happen. This is just some numbers this dude came up with. And that's terrible. And now that these things are being repealed and there's all these, you know, tool-assisted runs that are being applied to kind of help figure out what it is that can be done in these games, now it's kind of cool to see where that stuff goes.
Well, wasn't it also with Billy Mitchell, wasn't something pulled like Donkey Kong was his big claim to fame, but recently he was clearly using an emulator or something. I saw a bunch of articles about this.
Yes. So this eventually led to the looking into a lot of other world records. And one of the most prolific world record holders is Billy Mitchell, who is an interesting cat, to say the least. This article that I have a link to, I'll put it in the show notes, is it shows some GIFs of what it was that proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was not using an arcade cabinet, but he was using MAME, because the MAME version of Donkey Kong loads slightly differently than the arcade version. The stages themselves kind of load up piece by piece. Like, there's a GIF on here that's showing MAME loading up the last stage in Donkey Kong, where you have to, like, you know, knock down the little girder things and knock Donkey Kong all the way down to the floor. The ladders show up before everything else, and then everything else just, you know, appears piece by piece. Whereas the original arcade game, there's kind of a cascading swiping effect going on from left to right. Mm-hmm. And you can see in Billy Mitchell's video that they slowed down it loading like the MAME cabinet. All right, sorry, not MAME cabinet, like the MAME program.
Just the MAME emulator, yes.
Exactly. And what that means is that now MAME has a tool that allows you to keep replaying things, and then it just basically puts it together as if it was a one seamless run. And so there's absolutely no way to prove that he didn't do this. And considering, you know, he got his high scores and has never done it live, it's pretty, even the implication that he could have done this is like, you got to be kidding me with this stuff. Like, if you there's no way to prove that he didn't edit the thing. And
right, well, wasn't it that he got his high scores back in the day with Twin Galaxies, but, you know, later on the video he redid it, you know,
yeah,
through video. That's
like
exactly
King of,
what it was,
King
right?
of Kong, yeah, right. Like when King Kong came out, his records came under dispute, and he showed off, you know, sending that video in King of Kong, where there was a couple of sketchy things with the video, but they still accepted it because he was Billy Mitchell.
How long ago was that? That was probably over 10 years ago now, I would say, right? Probably 06, 07 was King of Kong?
Holy crap, really?
Was it
that long ago?
I think it was, because
you might be right. Ago. Just I've lost track of time. The King of Kong, 2007. Holy crap!
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I remember the band that I was playing in at the time.
Oh my god!
Because I used to play music before I did the Square Painter stuff. Anyway, yeah, me and one of the other guys in the band were into retro games, and I remember him showing me King of Kong. Crazy!
I really like that movie.
Oh yeah,
and you know. That rubbed me the wrong way. And, like, even, you know, creative editing aside, like, there was some pretty damning stuff. That whole thing in the video in King of Kong where they showed his score roll where there was, like, this little break in the video kind of thing. That always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And finding out that Billy Mitchell did, in fact, cheat is, like, well, I mean, I guess it just kind of is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We've interviewed him before. We did an interview with him at, I think it was Too Many Games. It must have been Too Many Games. It was a couple of years ago. Geeky had interviewed him, and he was, you know, he's a bit standoffish, but he was exactly that kind of personality that we were talking about. Like, you know, he's very, very assertive. What's the word? Confident. And borderlining on arrogance, and it's
I would say I'm sorry to interject, but I met him that year that he was there.
Mm-hmm.
Arrogant and rude, and I went up just to shake his hand, and he did this whole presiding type thing, like I should be happy to meet him. Like, dude, are you fucking serious? Don't do that. So
he definitely has a very high opinion of himself and his celebrity.
Huge turn off. I shook his hand, and I was like, all right, we're done here. I want nothing to do with you. And that was, ever since then, I've never liked the guy.
Which isn't to say he's not capable of being nice. Like, yeah, he's not straight-up supervillain, but he definitely rubbed me the wrong way, like, when we met him. And he's a weird cat. And now, knowing that he's been lying about his game scores for this sense of celebrity that he's clearly very, very proud of, this persona that he has.
Jeez, that's awful.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of exciting for some people who've always painted him as a supervillain. Can you imagine being Billy Mitchell?
No.
I could not. Never. No, absolutely not.
Building his entire, like, this whole persona on being, like, this
And, House of Cards.
I don't want to also don't want to take away from the fact like Billy Mitchell's really freaking good at Donkey Kong. Okay, like I watched him play the game when we were at too many games. So like, holy crap! Like I can't do what he's doing. I can't do that. That's
it's
awesome.
A very hard game.
It is a very hard game. I'm not great at it, and I don't want to say that Billy Mitchell is not really freaking good at Donkey Kong because he is. But this whole world record thing, this whole business is just ridiculous. Like to want that so badly and. Badly enough to cheat and just lie about it in a freaking movie, no less. Like King of Kong happened, and now you look back at that like, holy crap, he's as bad as that movie made him out to look.
Cause yeah, they definitely made him out to be the bad guy.
They did, and
it's just such a nothing thing. Like, and I don't mean to disparage it, and I know that sounds very harsh, but like we are just talking about a video game.
And we're talking about retro arcade games like it's not the Olympics.
Yeah, like but like at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of a sad commentary on like of if your life is devoid of purpose to a point and this is what you have to define it, then you are going to do whatever you can to maintain that level of nonsense that you have there. But like, I don't know, go read to underprivileged children. You know, like make a difference in the world. Like buy a homeless dude a shirt. Like fucking, you know what I mean? Like contribute to society. Like, you know, I mean, I know we do this video game podcast and we do take this shit very, very seriously, but like you can't have your life be defined. Like, I think what's good about this coming out now is that it can serve as a message to people who get so wrapped up in these sorts of things. And like, you know, Adam, kind of like what you're saying with the emulate the shit out of this, like,
uh-huh.
Don't give in to this mythology and aura that has been built up around this shit. Like, you don't have to pay that much money to play Little Samson.
Exactly.
You just go play Little Samson. Like, it's good, but it's not that good.
I feel like a lot of these mentalities are kind of a product of the times, in that back in the early 80s when the arcade scene was really going on and Twin Galaxies first came up, that these guys, this collective of guys, became like this whole boys club type thing of these elite like arcade players, and it was just very much a thing that happened back then of these guys like being immortalized of how good they were and being like deities in the arcade scene, and they need to carry on that legacy. And also with it being now a product of the times of how expensive these video games are, that these newer collectors that are getting into things need to have like a Little Samson to have that be like their trophy piece to show that they're a true collector, that they were, you know, they wanted to spend $1,000 on a video game to show that they truly are an NES collector and really care about it. So that's how like I kind of look at this.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be because like
no, it should not at all. And it, no, it drives me absolutely
now,
crazy.
If you look at the people who have since trounced both Steve Wiebe and I'll go back to that in a second. But the people who have since trounced the records that Billy Mitchell and
yeah,
Steve
he's
Wiebe
at like
set,
what 15th or 16th place or something like that.
I don't even.
Yeah,
think
ever since that movie
anymore.
Came out, other yeah, right. people were like,
of
all
course.
Right, well,
well, there was
I'll
a hype
this.
Train about that, and then especially yeah. around then, 06, 07 was when retro gaming was exploding. So mm-hmm. you had that coupled with King of Kong coming out, that you had all these other people coming in to try to beat these scores.
And those people aren't like Billy Mitchell. And that was one of the things in watching King of Kong. One of the reasons I liked Steve so much in that was that I related to him because he wasn't doing it for the fame or anything like that. He wasn't going for this weird glory of wanting to have his name on the top of the leaderboard immortalized in the Guinness Book of World Records or anything. He's like, yeah, I can do this. I want to do right. this. I want to mm-hmm. figure out if I can do this. And that's what, you know, You watch a really good speedrunner or something. When a speedrunner finally breaks their record or a world record on something,
right.
the elation that comes from something like that, that's what this should be about. And when it is about that, it's so amazing.
It's so cool.
But
I also I see a lot of like the speedrunner stuff right now. There is a culture of elitism in that too, and I guess there will be in anything, of this like core group of like speedrunners that are like fantastic of things that are setting all these records, and I hope there's nothing going on like this of people fudging their times or anything, but there will always be this, you know, bubble of elitism whenever there's a scene of these things going on.
Yeah, and that's the part that I really dislike. And,
of course,
and seeing
they're games. It's supposed to be fun.
It's supposed to be fun. Exactly. At its core, it's fun.
Game.
Yeah.
How about that?
And when it's done, when things like speedrunning and you know any of this like crazy boundary breaking and just figuring out what makes a game tick and figuring out like how can I shave a couple of seconds off of this out of the love of those games, well, you can tell the difference between someone who's doing this kind of stuff. And my earlier comment about saying that it's not the Olympics, I feel like that came off the wrong way because clearly I and you guys love video games to the very core of our existences. Like I adore games. It's small.
We've done this for the last 188 weeks in a fucking row. Also, yeah, as a quick aside, I am a total Olympic slut, and I'm really excited about the Olympics starting.
Oh,
this
me
week.
Too. I'm super stoked for the Olympics.
Skeleton. When is it?
Fuck when yeah, is Thursday?
What, is it the and what Olympics? Wait, what?
The Winter Olympics.
Oh, the Winter Olympics are this year. Oh, I had no idea.
Thursday.
Oh, holy Lord! How about that?
North Korea and South Korea are fielding a joined team.
Get out! Really?
That's the only good thing the president.
They're acknowledging
has done.
That their existence to each other.
Yeah, like North Korean athletes flew to Pyeongchang.
What? What?
Yeah.
I had no idea. That's incredible.
You got to get your head out of the brushes for a minute, man.
Seriously, I got to stop making stupid videos about King of Dragons and EVO Search for Eden.
I'm trying to pay some bills and whatnot, but
that is a huge deal.
And I said Pyeongchang, which is Pyongyang. I'm a fucking asshole. I am also very tired.
Right. But I called a Stegosaurus a Sterosaurus in my very
own. Oh, man,
I called
that was
myself
hysterical.
On it. You thought that was funny? Yeah.
I
said Sterosaurus. I went
there was,
back.
There was a couple of, like, there was, like, two, maybe three of those little, like, flubs that you did. And I'd looked at this, and I was looking at the screen, because I was listening and watching at the same time while I was doing dishes when I was, like, watching the video. And I'd, like, look at it and be like, wait, did he just say in rewinder for a second? You'd, like, put on the screen. Yeah, that's not a thing.
No, like, that's not a thing.
Dude, I'm talking to a camera, and I'm just ranting about a game, and I'm trying to be, like, my square painter persona on camera. It's very difficult to it's hard.
I used to do Into the Vault videos where I just pick random stuff from my collection and talk about them. I stopped doing it because I'm not entertaining like that.
I'm entertaining because I would have all my thoughts in my head. I don't have a checklist in front of me or anything like that. It's like 3, 2, 1 and go. I don't have my phone next to me. I don't have anything. I just pick up the game. I have my things in my head and I just rant and I cut it up. Anyway, Billy Mitchell.
Yeah. So
what a dick.
Good, wow, what a dick. What I was saying before is I didn't mean to kind of disparage that, saying that this isn't the Olympics, because I do think that there's, you know, competitive gaming is a very different kind of skill, and I have been as excited, as completely fascinated watching, like, in Evo Finals of Street Fighter 4 as I have watching, like, an Olympic match where a record is broken or something like that. There is 100%, I believe, that there is just the same type of dedication and crazy skill. It's just a different kind of skill. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, absolutely. Olympic, I would agree.
Watching pro gamers do things, like watching the Smash Brothers pros work their games, is like, I can't even follow it sometimes. It's like, you know, when they're in Dragon Ball, when the people are on the sides, like, I couldn't follow that attack. Like, that's what happens to me when I'm watching some of these things. Like, I just can't follow it. And it's fascinating to me. It really is. But
there's even a difference, like, if you look at those game, like, you watch an Evo tournament, and those guys are very dedicated and are very serious about what they're doing, but they're still having fun. You
they
watch
are,
a
yeah.
StarCraft tournament or a fucking Halo tournament, there's a lot less fun being had.
That's true.
In my experience.
StarCraft, StarCraft was, like, the only, like, strategy game that I played back in the day that I was honestly any good at. And even when I started getting good at that game, it didn't become fun anymore just because even if you missed out on like a microsecond of doing something, you were done. Like the other guy was going to take you out, and it just was not fun anymore. For me. No, it wasn't.
You know, it becomes this robotic, repetitive very much thing. You almost become like a living algorithm, and that's not fun.
No, I would never want
to say that it's not fun. It's not fun for me. I mean, it's possible that that's fun for other people, though.
It's
I don't
not,
want to
though.
Say that it's. I can't
say
for
say
sure. I'm not
care.
Those other people.
No, I mean, I agree. Like, hey, to each his own. But that is not fun for me either. Honestly, for me, speedrunning is something that I think is fascinating to watch. But it's something that I would never, ever even think to attempt or want to, because. A game that I love, like Ninja Gaiden, I would love to get to the point of getting through that game of doing a no-hit, no-death run. And I'm pretty damn good at Ninja Gaiden, and if I really practiced, I can get to that point. But I don't know if I want to do that and get to that point, because it would ruin the game for me of like really having to break down every nuance of it. It would ruin like the magic of the game for me.
I was doing that with Punch-Out for a while. I was figuring out... Mike Tyson's Punch-Out on NES, I was just mathematically breaking that game down of exactly how to react to everything. And it got to a point where I was like, well, I'm not actually playing the game anymore now.
Right.
I'm performing the game. And that's just kind of a different experience for me. And if I kept working at it, I probably could have gotten to, you know, to that kind of point if I really, really hammered it home. But at that point, it kind of stopped being fun. And that's what we're talking about. But
there's one whole thing. All right, odd tangent here just for that. Do you guys remember The Adventures of Pete and Pete?
Uh-huh. Of course.
Yeah, there's the one episode with the guy, Inspector 34, the underwear inspector, where he does everything perfect.
Yep, he eats the barbecue.
Yep, and he like stacks the bones. There's one thing where there's a whole commentary on that where all the kids in the neighborhood would play kick the can. And it was just, you know, it's a kid's game that you play in the street. But he broke it down to be so nuanced to that they were literally sitting there writing out statistics on a sheet to figuring out who would win in Kick the Can. And when I watched that, I was almost like, yeah, I like speedrunning and all this and all. But that's essentially what you're doing when you're breaking down a game that you love. You're you know, it's a game that's so much fun that you love. You love what it is, but you're breaking it down to like rote numbers and arithmetic. And does that make it fun?
And to a certain extent, I can see that digging into it can be fun. Like Ferg, actually, we were talking about earlier. He posted this really fascinating article, and I didn't remember what it was related to, but he posted it in a comment on Facebook, and it was about this guy who quote unquote fixed E.T. for Atari.
E.T. is not that bad. It's not a great game, but it's playable.
And that's what that's what his whole purpose was of this article. It's like, E.T.'s not a bad game. It's got a few fatal flaws. And so he fixed things like the collision detection isn't actually the problem. It's that, like, he compared E.T. to, he compared it to the way The Legend of Zelda works, because it's basically the same perspective. And when you're Link, you can walk up to an object and it doesn't collide with him until it's about halfway down his body, because it's really colliding with the bottom part of him, like his feet. And that's the thing with E.T. When you walk by a hole and your head hits the hole, you fall down. So he fixed that in the programming. He made a version of the game that fixes things like E.T.'s not green anymore because he's not green in the movie. You turn him into brown, you know, like he matches the color in the movie. They changed the hit detection so that basically you can walk past the pits and it's not until like more than halfway down E.T.'s body, if that's the part that touches the hole, that's when you fall in.
So the hitbox was changed.
Exactly. The hitbox has changed. Like, a lot of little things like that. And I thought that was a really fascinating story. And reading this article, the guy dug into it and broke it down piece by piece. Like, all right, how does this game work? What made these things happen so that I can figure out if I can fix them? And I can see how that kind of teardown can be a really fascinating and fun thing to look at. Like this neat little peek behind the curtain of what makes this game that I love tick.
Of course.
But
he didn't do that to say that he was better than somebody.
Exactly. Right. And that right there, that sums it up right there.
Exactly.
That's the difference between this group of people, particularly Todd Rogers and Billy Mitchell. I think that their main reason for doing these things was to be able to say that they were better than other people.
Exactly. And that brings me back to my point before of this whole elitist culture in the late 70s, early 80s. Of these like arcade gurus, and they had to be like the best, and they were held in such high esteem because like the arcade scene exploded back then, and you know that's their one claim to fame. And Dan, you were saying that before, like that's the one thing you're clinging to. That's really pathetic, and it is the one thing that they're clinging to, and it really sucks that they. Like, it is sad.
I feel bad for him, you know, like that. It because it's not to say like you know like Chris was saying like obviously we love this stuff and we, you know, that there's. You know, we spend a fair amount of time and get into heated arguments and discussions about
of
shit,
course.
But it's like the same thing. Like, I'm sure you guys like had visited a comic shop at one point where some dudes were having an argument about who would win in a fight between like Superman and Thor. Stop it. What the fuck is wrong
but those
with
are
you?
Always those were always like in like I guess if they were fun to discuss and like break things down.
Right,
and
but
to
no,
say
but,
yeah, why.
But when it got to the point where people weren't having fun with that
exactly.
argument anymore,
when it got to the point when it was like heated, then, like, all right, guys, come on. Like,
when it got to the point where DC fans are review bombing Black Panther because they hate Marvel or
yeah,
other reasons.
Like,
no, that was for different reasons. But we're not gonna talk about political and social motivations of things, right?
Not at the moment. No.
Okay. No. Okay. That will be a whole other tangent. Yeah. I heard Black Panther was awesome, though.
I can't wait to see it. No,
yeah,
I can't
looks,
wait to see that movie.
It looks
ridiculous.
Great. It looks really cool.
And the Tolkien white guy joke is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Have you heard this? The Tolkien white guy joke.
No. Is Tom Arnold involved? Because Tom Arnold, you know, he was like the token white guy in like all the DMX movies.
No, it's
okay,
the two white people in the movie are Bilbo Baggins and Gollum. They're the Tolkien white guys.
Oh, Tolkien. How silly. You got me.
I can't take credit for that joke, but I saw it online, and I could not stop laughing. That is freaking genius.
Oh, boy.
God, I'm looking at this Todd Rogers page again. I'm looking at Journey Escape for Atari 2600, which we've talked about on the show before is my
that
guilty pleasure
fun.
Game.
Yeah, I
love
I
Journey Escape, man. And the proven second place record of 4,317,804 points was approximately 4 hours and 20 minutes. I cannot imagine playing that game for 4 hours and 20 minutes. I can't imagine playing that game for more than hour.
Any Atari game for 4 hours? Like, those are like...
That's crazy.
15-20
yeah.
minute playthroughs.
Well, this guy's world record that no longer exists with 105,779,605 points.
And
that would have estimated taken 106 hours solid of Journey Escape.
And that was the dragster Todd Rogers
that,
guy.
Yeah, that was the dragster guy.
Oh, geez. So okay, so.
I'm
just to be
trying
clear.
To wrap my head around 106 hours of Journey, like the just 106 hours of the music of Journey's Escape with drums.
Wasn't it like four notes repeating over and over or something like that?
Just,
I remember it
yeah.
being really annoying. that's one I very much remember from when I was a kid. I remember it had annoying music. Anyway, so where is it at now with this Todd Rogers guy? Have all of these insane scores that you clearly cannot get. Have they all been removed from Twin Galaxies?
I believe so,
or?
Yes.
Yep.
I believe
okay.
Twin Galaxies has removed all of Todd's scores and has banned him from submitting new scores.
Oh, wow. Is what's his name? I met him. Oh, fuck. Walter Day. Is he still the
no.
guy, like the main
no,
guy?
No, he's not.
Okay.
No, he sold Twin Galaxies, which is a part of why this is all happening, because,
okay,
you know, I don't know how Walter Day would have reacted to this stuff, because I know he cared a lot about this, but I think he was also pretty enamored by that boys' club. You know what I mean?
Oh, very much. Well, wasn't he
oh,
the one that started that?
Him.
Yeah, and he
right.
yeah he was the one that was accepted Billy Mitchell's score in King of Kong because it was Billy Mitchell.
Right, right, right.
So
there were a lot of factors going on there with a lot of these things.
Crazy that this is like there's so much drama surrounding this. But I'm really glad that it is coming to light.
No, absolutely. In the gaming community, this honestly needs to, especially with competitive speedrunning gaming and things like that, that just to show that this will not be allowed to set a standard here that you cannot do this, that cheaters or liars, thieves, anything, you will be called out.
Mm-hmm. I'm very happy about that. I'm sad that this has happened and that this has been the standard for so long, that mm-hmm. these scores have been in place forever, and we have the tools now to prove this kind of stuff. But it's like, man, this is it's in the road of legitimizing video games, which I guess really isn't as much of a thing anymore. You know, that I remember for the longest time, video games were just kind of frowned upon by other entertainment medium fans. Oh,
of course, for years. I think video games didn't really get legitimized in the mainstream until, I would say, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare was the one that really did it with the multiplayer, of how that broke everything open 10, 12 years ago. Then it started being looked at in a different way. Maybe even Halo, but Modern Warfare, I think, was the one game that really was the one that split it open.
Yeah, and now you're getting, like, celebrities doing voice work in games like
that. Of course, yeah.
It's funny. I haven't even thought about this until this moment
unfortunately, Kevin Spacey, wasn't he, like, the antagonist in one of the Call of Duty games? He was, like, some corporate...
Oh, wow. I think you're right.
He was, like... Wasn't the story that he was head of some corporation that was like some military conglomerate and essentially was providing weapons to the government, and then he like was like pretty much bought out the United States government, and like it was corporation controlled or something like that? It sounds like something out of a William Gibson novel, but wasn't that? I think that was a story from Call of Duty. Anyway.
I feel like I remember Kevin Spacey being involved in one of those, but
I know he definitely was, but anyway.
I can't speak to that. I've never really spent any time with Call of Duty. It's not my jam.
I don't know who this person is that you speak of. I've never heard that name before.
It's been not me neither. Kaiser Soze, he just, you know, like, whoosh, like that. He's gone.
Profound sadness.
It is.
Anyway. Well, I guess that's it. Right? I feel that we've exhausted the topic. I'm glad things are coming to light. I'm glad that people aren't going to be so turned off to try to accomplish high scores, since there's no longer impossible to get high scores sitting in place. I'm sad that this Todd Rogers guy got away with it for so long. And I mean, really, the universe at large, I'm sure, doesn't actually care. Like, you really ask the average person who Billy Mitchell is, and they don't know. That's kind of the big joke of all of it. Like,
no, it is and it isn't, because a lot of people on the outside don't care, but us, there's a lot of us. There's many, many of us, thousands upon thousands of us that do care, that are in this. So it does matter.
It does matter, yeah, to us. I don't remember where I was going with that.
Right here.
I was going right here. You're right, Dan.
You were going to the point right where you say, and that's our show.
And that's our show. You're right. That is our show. Thank you, Adam, again for coming on.
Anytime, man. It's always a blast talking with you guys.
Love shooting the shit on video games with you.
Of course.
So let's see. Join us next week, where we're going to continue our Creators Month with a visit from a YouTube creator who goes by the name Poop Poop Fart. We'll be talking about how he creates his videos, what games he likes to play, and I'm going to ask him about his name, because I'm genuinely curious. He makes YouTube music videos that have impressed me just beyond.
I'm gonna check out Poop Poop Fart as soon as we wrap this up.
You know what I love about this guy?
His name is Poop Poop Fart.
Well, that's wonderful. But on top of that, he went to go create a Twitter account, and it turns out Poop Poop Fart was already taken. So his Twitter account is Crap Crap Toot. I love this guy. I'm really excited to talk to him and talk about his, like, it's going to get nerdy, because I know nothing about the guy, really. Almost nothing about him. I've seen one video where he actually talks, and he portrayed himself as a puppet, so.
He's elusive. He's a voice.
I don't know. I really don't. It's going to be a lot of fun to chat with him. I hope it goes well. So that's next week. It's going to be super fun. So Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, follow us on Twitter at @the_Geekade, find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade K-R-I-S, and Dan is at?
At Geekade Dan.
And Adam, you are on the Twitters. You are at?
I am. I was lucky to get Square Painter on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. All
wow,
four. Yeah, I got a royal, not a royal flush. It was a four of a kind on that. Yeah, I got a four of a kind on that. So please check me out on any of those social media platforms, especially on YouTube. I'm going to be putting out a lot of more YouTube video content.
And he's an attractive man, so he's worth looking at.
Oh, shush.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And he's back. We'd also like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on geekade.com for even more fresh, original content. One more time, Adam, it has been a pleasure. You are always welcome to come on the show. I'm looking forward to having you and Nina on again for some trivia. I forgot to mention at the top of the show, I was bummed Nina couldn't come. She had a work thing or something.
She had a whole work thing with because we live in Philadelphia again, and schedules have kind of gotten messed up because there's that thing called the Philadelphia Eagles, and they won the sports ball bowl. And they're throwing a parade for him on Thursday, so all the businesses are going to be closed. So Nina has to put in all this time at her job. She's a Mac technician at a company, so she has to kind of catch up on all that because they're going to be closed on Thursday. I think Friday also. So
thoughts?
Yeah, kind of sucks, but got to do what
at
you
got to
do.
At least the Patriots didn't win.
I thought it was the Vikings that it was. I don't even know. You know
that
what?
That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what? Why did I even say that? I don't fucking know.
I don't think right now you're allowed to be in Philly and admit that you don't like.
Seriously, I'm waiting for like the hatchets to come through my door and like me to get thrown out the window.
There's motherfuckers standing outside right now. They're like, I'm gonna let
torches.
You finish, dude.
No, I'm gonna let you finish
that show,
and you're gonna die.
Funny, but then you're dead. Like,
yeah.
It's over.
West Philly wasn't so crazy the other night. It was just, like I said, a lot of yelling and screaming in the street and fireworks and cars honking. No, like, you know, telephone poles getting ripped out of the ground.
I'm blanking on the actual lyrics, but was that why Fresh Prince had to go living with Uncle Phil? Like,
you want to know a secret? I've never seen a full episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Never have.
But in the opening, you've seen the opening sequence. Was it in West Philadelphia, born and raised?
In West Philadelphia, born and raised.
All right, yeah, it was West Philadelphia.
On the playground, Chris, is where he spent most of his days.
Chilling out, Maxin.
He would be chilling out, Maxin, relaxing all cool, and shooting b-ball outside of the school.
I love Will Smith. I think he's fantastic, but I never have.
Except his dead shot, other than that.
Oh, what was that in that?
Suicide Squad?
Well, that movie doesn't exist because, you know, even the trailer was so bad.
God, I did not care to see that
movie. He had to have damage tattooed on his head to show people that he was damaged.
Get it?
You get it? You get it? It was right there.
He
was
Joker.
He's the Joker. Yeah, you get it? That's why. Because, if you're fucked up and crazy, you clearly get fucked up and crazy tattooed on your head to prove it.
Real quick. My wife explained it to me because I didn't understand what the fuck they were going for in that movie. And she explained it. When the original Batman comics were created, the Joker was a gangster. And in this modern universe, he is still a gangster. Just what he would be if a gangster developed today.
All right.
Fuck. You're right. And now it's worse.
I guess. I mean, to me, Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson will always be the Joker to me.
Oh, it's without question.
Yeah, even though Heath Ledger's Joker was amazing, but Jack Nicholson.
Different Joker.
I just rewatched.
It's such a different take.
We can argue that point on another show.
No, I rewatched. I know, that could be a whole thing. I rewatched, like, the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy, and my God, I like those movies when they came out. Holy shit, are they good?
They're really good. Like, I haven't really rewatched the third one in a long time.
Oh, see, no, I was going to go the opposite.
Dude, Batman Begins. I don't love them. I didn't like Batman Begins when it first came out because they're all on Netflix now. Oh my god, Batman Begins is so good.
It is. I recently rewatched those two.
No, because I didn't
know
like
such
it.
Thing as enough Liam Neeson. Come on, that's not a fair thing to say.
The big thing I didn't like was that there wasn't a stereo, like one of the big villains. There wasn't the Riddler or the Penguin or something like that. Who the fuck is Ra's al Ghul? I didn't read the comics. I didn't know. But I went into it with like an open mind of it being just its own thing. And god damn, is that movie good.
All right, I'm calling time out, or else we're going to... This is...
All right,
that's
this
true.
Will become,
yeah,
a, it'll become a whole thing.
Podcast.
It's a whole thing.
I'm not a comic fan whatsoever, but I do love Batman, but more from the movies. So I understand that.
Well, with that, that's it, everybody.
Thank you for listening.
That's now our show.
All right.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Dan. Keep playing games.